this rachman. Right, the Hashem, Hashem, Kerachem, Rachamim, etc., etc. And the question is, what exactly are we supposed to be thinking? What is slichas? And I've been asked in the past as well that often when you say slichas together with a load of other people, then often it's very fast and you haven't got a clue what you're supposed to be focusing on. And also more than that, we're going to see on Yom Kippur as well, this idea of Hashem, Hashem, these Yud Gimel Mid Serachim, which we're going to explain, they're a big theme of Yom Kippur on the whole, right? When we get to Ne'ilah, we're saying it over and over and over and over again. So we need to have some sort of idea of what we're supposed to be focusing on when we're saying these words. What exactly is it? What's the context of the Psukim? And what's the context of the message to do with us on at this time when we say it, and also on Yom Kippur? So let's take a look. There's a Gemara which discusses this. And it describes the following. So let's give a bit of background on the Chumash. So the Torah describes that when the Klal Yisrael sinned with the Egel Hazor, with the golden calf, so as we know, Hashem had just given Klal Yisrael the Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai, then he comes down, and there's this golden calf there. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, right, that's it, I'm destroying Klal Yisrael, and I'm starting everything again from you. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, how's it possible? You got to continue Klal Yisrael. In fact, if you want to do that, then Mecheni no Misifracha, rub me out from the Torah, I'm not interested. And what eventually happens is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I'm gonna do the following. Let me just quote the pasuk. So, the pasuk describes that Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu the following. This is in Shmoyis Perik Lamed Dalet, and I'm gonna read the pasukim. Then I'll tell you what the Gemara says, and then we'll talk the practicalities. The pasuk describes that Hashem, as it were, came in a cloud. He appeared to Moshe somehow in a cloud, and Hashem passed before him, and he said, "Hashem, Hashem, Kerachem, Mechanon, etc., etc." Those words. And the Gemara says the following. Gemara says, "It's the words of Rabbi Yochanan." Rabbi Yochanan says, "If not for it being a pasuk, it would be impossible to say that Kaddish Baruch Hu, as it were, wrapped himself up like a chazan." Whatever that means. But he wrapped himself up like a chazan. And he showed Moshe the Seder Tefillah, the order of the davening. And he said to him the following. He said, any time when Yisrael Choytin, when the Jewish nation have sinned, they should perform in front of me the following order, and I'll forgive it for them. And I'll forgive them. They should perform in front of me the following, and I'll forgive them. What is it? What's the performance? Hashem, Hashem, they should say, this is the way we understand it, they should say Hashem, Hashem, Kerachem, Mechanon. And then the Gemara straight away explains, what's Hashem, Hashem? It means, Ani hu koidim shechta adam, I'm Hashem before a person sinned. Va'ani Hashem, and I'm also Hashem, la'achar sheyechta adam yas teshuvah. I'm also Hashem after the person sins and does teshuvah. So that's what Hashem, Hashem is. I'm Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, before the sin, and I'm also the same Hashem even after the sin. Okay. So there are some. There's a couple of very, very basic questions. Very basic questions, which we want to delve into. Anyone have any questions? Again, I'm just going to sort of summarize it again, and then we'll go into questions. What happens the following? Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, you're right, there is a concept of Klal Yisrael sinning. But you know what? Whenever Klal Yisrael sins, they should say the following in front of me. Say, Hashem, Hashem, Kerachem, Mechanon, Rechabayim, Rechaz, Be'ranaz, Rechaz, 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 Okay? Sorted. Make sense?
Just like that,
exactly. That's the question, right? It sounds a bit funny. It sounds a bit like magic.
We wouldn't have all this
davening
to do.
That's all right. That's exactly it, right? What are we messing around with all this preparation? Just say this and finished, right? It does sound like a magic incantation which we can just say and then finished. So how does it make any sense? Then it needs to have some sort of sense here. It doesn't make sense for it just to be something we should say and then we're finished with. So I'm going to share with you a moshel. One or two of you will definitely have heard this from me before. It could be you've all heard it, but I guarantee you I've heard it more times than you. Guaranteed. And it's a moshel which works for me, and it talks to me, so that's why I want to share it. And it literally takes me through Svichas, through Rosh Hashanah a little bit. We'll see. Does it feed into Rosh Hashanah a little bit? Certainly through Yom Kippur. Here's the story. I think my mother's heard it. I don't know. If not, you might be a bit surprised, but and it's an interesting little story. So when I was about 15, I didn't say this last year, when I was about 15, then I used to often help my father set up for shul on Erev Shabbos. You remember it? Okay, fine.
That sounds good.
I used to set up for shul on Erev Shabbos. And we used to put out tablecloths, white tablecloths on the tables. And then my father used to, when we finished, he used to go upstairs and he used to say to me, right, I'm just going to go upstairs and do the lights. Because he used to put the lights on a Shabbos clock, time switch. So obviously he didn't need me to do that, right? That was just going upstairs and pressing some buttons. It took 2 minutes, fine. What I used to do almost every week was the following. I used to take his keys after we finished putting out the tablecloths. And I used to go outside into the car park and get into the car and turn on the engine. Now, there's one slight problem. The slight problem was I was never taught how to drive. And I'm not a handy person. These things don't come naturally. They just don't come naturally to me. It took me a long time to pass my test. I'm not a good driver. But it was a car, and it was there. So every week I used to turn on the engine, empty car park, and I used to press some pedals with my feet, and I used to mess around with it, move a bit, and you know. And there was this unspoken agreement between us. He'd come out, walk down the steps. And I'd get into the passenger seat as if nothing happens. The engine was off and there was nothing. There was an unspoken little bit of fun that I used to have every week. Fine. And this went on probably for a good few months. Unbeknownst to my mother, of course. One week, I get into the car. And as I mentioned, I didn't know how to drive a manual. Right, literally, I was just messing around with it. And I get in the car and I press down on something, which is the gas. And somehow or other, instead of going forward, I sped backwards and heard a little noise. And I got out and I realized that the car had hit the railings. But I took a look at the, obviously, I was very, very nervous, but I took a look at the back of the car and it was a Volvo estate and they're very, very decent cars. Nothing. Obviously, my heart's still beating very, very fast. I get back in the car and try and work it out. I'll get the car back where it was. I quickly get out before my father even comes down. And by the time he came down, he, as far as I was concerned, nothing had gone wrong. He gets into the car and he says, "Shai, was there some sort of noise when I was upstairs?" Noise? Wasn't noise. Fine, that was that. Anyway. It comes Sunday, and my father says, "Shai, can I have a word with you in the front room?" Now, my father's not a scary, scary man. He's not the sort of person that would whack me either. But I was a bit scared. I knew there was something serious. So we go into the front room, and he says to me, "Shai, honestly, you got to realize the railings next to the shul are broken. There's three railings which have been knocked out." He said, "You're not going to get in trouble. I just need to know what happened." He said, "Did you do it when you were driving in the car on Erev Shabbos?" And I looked at my father. I looked him in the face. I looked him in the eyes. And I said, "Wasn't me." He says, "Shai, seriously, it's fine. If it was you, it's okay. Just tell me. Was it you? Did you go into the railings?" And again, I said, "It wasn't me." And I still remember walking out and I felt sick. It was dreadful moment. But I looked at him. He was looking at me kindly. And I just lied point blank to him. He actually didn't find out that I lied to him until a few years ago. But why was I not able to tell the truth to him? And this is really the point. What was it? He wasn't going to hit me. The answer is by looking at him in the eyes and saying, Daddy, it was me. And although you trusted me, I messed up. It would have created an imbalance. It would have changed things for the future. Things would have been completely different. That means even if you would have told me off, even if you would have said to me, Shai, it's fine, don't worry about it. Things are sorted. Don't worry, it's only just a few quid. It's fine. We'll get the rating sorted out. I just want to know. Move on. There's no doubt about it. On Friday afternoons, after putting out the tablecloths, and I want to go and play in the car, it's not going to be the same feeling. It won't be the same sort of, yeah, it's fine, and you know and I know. I won't be able to do it. And even if I will be able to do it, I'll feel bad every single week. Every single week. Again, I didn't realise this is why I wasn't able to tell him the truth, but that's what it was. I knew he trusted me. I knew there was a certain level of relationship, of agreement until that point. I knew that from now on, by me telling him I messed up, it will never be the same. It won't be the same. No way. There's no way. It's impossible. Hashem says, you've got to realize the following. Hashem, Hashem. Hashem, the word Hashem, Yudke Vovke, always, always signifies a loving relationship. Always. Avraham Avinu describes his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a relationship of walking with Hashem, with Yudke Vovke. Noach, though, was Elikim. It was a different type of relationship. Yudke Vovke was always signifying a level of relationship. And Hashem says, Hashem, Hashem. Don't worry about it. If you admit and you say what went wrong and you talk to me, you have a relationship with me, and you tell me, yes, I messed up, don't worry, it's going to be exactly the same. It's going to be exactly the same. Nothing will change. You'll still be able to have the same conversations with me. You'll still have the same level of respect in my eyes because I'm a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I'm not a regular person. I'm not a boss of Adam. With a regular person, the boss of Adam, it's very, very difficult to do teshuva. It's very, very difficult to go to someone who we've basically stepped out of line, they trusted us, and we sort of abused the trust. And to go to them and say, do you know what we did? We abused the trust, because we know it just won't be the same. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Hashem, Hashem, realize I'm not like that in the slightest. I'm not like that in the slightest. Again, Ani Hashem koidem shiyechta ha'adam, v'ani Hashem la'acha shiyechta ha'adam yasa teshuva. I'm also Hashem after the person sins and does teshuva. And what is teshuva? The Rambam says the following expression regarding teshuva. He says, there's four parts of teshuva. Let's get this right. He says, teshuva is charata, regretting having done a sin. It's azivas hachet, that means leaving the sin behind. And it's also kabbalah lahaba, expressing that I'm not going to do it again, and vidui, confession. So again, there's three things and vidui. What are they? Again, one more time. Regret. There is leaving the sin behind, and also expressing that in the future I'm not going to do it again. But the Rambam says the following expression about teshuva. He says someone that does vidui, he confesses, but he doesn't do any of the other three things. His expression is, it's as if he has dipped in the mikveh with an insect in his hand, with a sheretz biyodo. Kilu toval v'sheretz biyodo. It's as if he dips in the mikveh, but there's an insect in his hand. Now, what does that mean? If you think about that, it means the following. If a person goes to the mikveh, but they're holding an insect, they're holding something which is tommy still in the hand, they've gone to the mikveh. There's just something else which is a side point which they're missing. They're missing a side point. But they've done the main body of the thing. The Rambam seems to be saying, by saying that a person who does vidui but doesn't do the others, it's as if he's dipped in the mikveh. It's just as a sheretz in his hand. What he's saying is, he's done that vidui is the teshuva. Admitting what I've done, that is teshuva.
All the other things are just ways of leaving the sin behind. But the real teshuvah is admitting. So Hashem says, and again, this is just one idea. I want to share with you just another idea as well and put it together. But this first idea is the following. That the idea of Hashem, and through that we get kapara, the idea of Hashem is to give us confidence to do teshuvah. What stops us from doing teshuvah normally with a person? Because we don't want things to be different. We don't want the relationship to be ruined. We'll often even justify to ourselves, we can't tell so-and-so what we've done to them because they won't be able to deal with it. Things won't be the same. All sorts of worries about the future. With Hashem, no. Things can remain beautiful afterwards. Hashem. And Hashem before, and Hashem after. And that gives us the confidence to do the vidui properly. Now, what does this mean practically for us? Obviously, to do vidui during Yom Kippur itself, during the Achet, is an amazing thing. But the truth is, between now and Yom Kippur, it's really an opportunity for us to talk to Hashem and have a conversation as if we're having a conversation with another person who we realize we wronged. Right? To talk literally in English to Hashem. Let me set aside a few minutes and say, Hashem, over the past year, I've tried. I'm actually quite happy with myself. But Hashem, there are areas which I still want to work on. And, you know, I've done X, Y, and Z still. I shouldn't have acted this way. I feel bad about it. And talk to Hashem. This idea of talking to Hashem, of a real, I hate the word confession. Because whenever I think of the word confession, I think of a confession box. Right? Unfortunately, right? Not confession, it's a schmooze. It's clearing the air. That's what it's clearing the air, confession. That's really what confession is, right? A confession is there's been all this sort of stuff in the past, and now we're getting it out, right? We're taking the elephant in the room, and we're just saying, there's the elephant, and let's talk about it, right? It's realizing what we've done and talking to Hashem about it. And I mentioned it. I saw a couple of months ago, someone put a WhatsApp status, which I saw, which is quite funny, but it wasn't very nice at all. It said, don't thank Hashem on his status, thank Hashem in Shemayin Esra. That's what he said. Did anyone ever see anything like that? No, okay. So what's he referring to? Because a lot of people, they put like, thank you Hashem, or TYH on their status, right? So, okay, whether a person wants to put thank you Hashem on their status or not, that's one thing. But just to say thank Hashem and Ishmael and Esra, that's not right. That's not right at all. A person should be talking to Hashem the whole time. This is something which they encourage in Breslov. But a person's enough to do a Breslov to do it. Right? A person should be talking to Hashem the whole time. And again, this idea, we want to understand that vidui, this teshuva, is clearing the air, not confession. It's clearing the air, talking to Hashem. Although to a normal person, we might not want to say these things, but Hashem, who's Hashem before the Chet and Hashem after the Chet, that should give us the confidence to talk to Hashem, right? Talk to Hashem whenever it is. And this is something which I know comes more naturally to women than men, talking to Hashem. Men need very structured way of davening. For women, it comes much more naturally. I think one of my kids, if you can correct me, I think it was this Shabbos. I think one of the kids said, should they go to shul for a certain thing? And I said, you just need to, wherever you daven better. And I said, men need to go to shul. Because if daddy doesn't go to shul, daddy's davening isn't great. Right? Men, we're different. Again, obviously, I hate to make generalizations. I was once giving a Shalom Bias shir, and I gave some generalizations about men. And he was getting in trouble with that. And one guy came up to me afterwards and said, you should know something. The way you described men and women just now is the absolute opposite in my relationship. Right? A lot of people said, not like that. And he wasn't complaining. He just said, you know, you should know, for us, it's different. Fine. But this idea of having a conversation and clearing the air with Hashem over the next couple of weeks, very, very important thing. Very chashuv thing. Yeah, yeah.
Is it because, like, with Hashem, you don't have to really say anything because he knows actually what you want and what you mean? But with people, it's sort of like, what you don't know, don't harm. So you can, if somebody's wronged somebody or vice versa, you can some bury your head in the sand and just think, okay, fine, they won't know. So maybe my subconscious, but I'm going to sort of push it away, is it will alter the relationship. But with Hashem, it's not going to alter the relationship because he knows anyway.
Yeah, which actually, yes, that's 100% true, 100% true. Which really just makes it actually easier for us to talk to Hashem. The only problem is which is part of what you're saying. Sure.
You can hurt Hashem's feelings by.
Sure, but you're saying, but
that you did something wrong.
Sure, 100% with you, 100% with you. Benon lechaver, admitting to a friend will be, like I said, because they don't know. Hashem does know, right? But even when someone knows something, then, and maybe this is why that moshul for my father actually resonates so much more now that I'm thinking about it. Always worried about it. It does resonate with me. Do you know why it resonates? I think because he knew. He probably knew. I'm sure he knew.
But not owning up can also alter the relationship because then the person knows that they're hiding something from the other person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So either way, it's not going to be the same whether you own up or whether.
Sure. Sure. 100%. 100%. 100%. But I do think that this idea of clearing the air, of talking to Hashem, getting it out there, so to speak. You see what I'm saying? Getting it out there. I mean, of course I've done it, and of course Hashem knows. But talking about it, that develops the relationship even further with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That really develops the relationship. And without these conversations, we don't necessarily feel that connection. Right? It's the connections in our time which really creates that connection. So that's point one, which I wanted to discuss. So again, question was, is how on earth does Hashem, how on earth by saying Yugim Mitzrachim, does that allow a person to have teshuva? The answer is because it gives us the confidence to do the real teshuva, which is the talking to Hashem about it. Why, how does it give us the confidence? Because it's Hashem before the chait and it's Hashem after the teshuva as well. With that, we have the ability to talk to Hashem honestly and openly. And we have to find the time to be able to do that. But again, any spare moment, talk to Hashem. It's a very, 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 very important thing. Another point, which I heard, that the concept I heard from Ramusha Weinberger from Five Towns in America, wherever that is. He said a beautiful idea which I want to relate to this. I want to connect it as an answer to this question, and then maybe put it all together. So I'll try not to keep you for more than another 15 minutes, but this is a beautiful idea. Beautiful idea. Okay, so we've got a question, Hashem, right? And that's what we want to deal with. How exactly does Hashem work? The first answer is it gives us confidence for teshuvah. I'm going to suggest another answer as well. We know that Rosh Hashanah is called Yom Teruah. So the root of Yom Teruah, so we normally say that Teruah is referring to the blowing of the shofar. But Rav Moshe Weinberger says, take a really strong look at the word Yom Teruah, and you'll see some other roots there as well. You'll see Ru'uah, which is weak. For example, in Chazal, they often talk about a weak wall, a kaisel ru'uah, the weak wall. You also see the word there of reos, reim, friendship. You see those words there. So that's point one. Okay, now let's like build it a bit more. So number one, Yom Teruah has got these, besides for being the Yom Teruah, as we know it, it's also got this idea of something to do with weakness and something to do with friendship. But also, Elul, this is a very, very famous, there's a very famous Rosh HaTevis for Elul, which the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch brings down, which is Ish L'Re'ehu Matanos Evyonim. Right, it's a very famous posuk from Megillah, which means each man to his friend and give him Matanos Evyonim. Again, this word Re'ehu coming up. So he says, in order to work out what a re'ehu is, or a friend really is, you need to take a look at the first place this comes up in the Torah. The first place where the word re'ehu, which has got this weakness, it's got this friendship, the first time it comes up in the Torah is often going to be the teacher of what the word really means. So the first place it comes up, let's try and find it, is in an episode which is often missed out in schools, in Parshas V'yeshev, which is the episode of Yehuda and Tamar. So just a quick overview of the episode. Basically, what happens is Tamar is Yehuda's daughter-in-law, and Tamar had married two of Yehuda's sons, and they both died. And now Tamar is told by Yehuda that she can't get remarried because she has to wait until the youngest son of Yehuda grows up, and then she should marry him. So basically, Tamar is left as a widow. And again, just to sort of cut a long story short, Tamar dresses up as a Zayna, and Yehuda, as we know, not realizing who she is, doesn't have ear with her. That is basically the story, and obviously the Mefarshim go to town, all discussing what exactly it means, and you know, did he have Bechir, did he not have Bechir? There's a lot to discuss, but that's the basic story. And the Pasuk describes that Tamar left with Yehuda, Yehuda left with Tamar, a mashkin, collateral, something that would be there as a guarantee that he'll pay up what he owes her financially. Fine. That's the end of the first chapter. Now, obviously the story continues and eventually Yehuda admitted what he'd done wrong. Okay. But the point is that the very first time the Torah discusses or mentions the word Re'ehu is when Yehuda tells over to his friend what he'd done. The Pasuk describes that he went and told Re'ehu Hadulam, I'm trying to find the word. Yeah, the Pasuk says, V'yishlach Yehuda es gedi ha'izim b'yad Re'ehu Hadulam l'kach t'rov m'yad ha'ishav l'imotzah. The Pasuk describes that Yehuda, there was this person called Re'ehu Hadulami. That's the first thing that comes up. This person, Hadulami, his Re'ehu. And he told him what happened and said, I messed up, but I do need to sort out some financial affairs now. Reb Simcha Bunim Pshischa says the following. He says, everyone in the world needs to have such a friend. Even when a person has sunk to the lowest of the low, and they're feeling completely broken, completely, completely broken, they need to have someone who they can confide in. Everyone needs to have such a friend. So what's a friend? A friend is someone when a person's ru'ua, they're broken, they're weak, they're drowning. There's someone they can talk to. There's someone they can confide in. That's a real friend. That's a re'ehu, a real friend. And this re'ehu had along was that guy. Obviously, I'm sure he said to Yehuda at the time, listen, Yehuda, we're going to have to go on a serious teshuva process now, right? But that wasn't the time. At the time when he told him, he listened. He was there for him. There was someone he could be open with. That was a real friend. And Yehuda realized that. That's where Yehuda went to him. That's what a re'ehu is. That's what a re'ehu is. We're told the following in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't actually say that if a person says Hashem, Hashem, he'll get kapara. It doesn't say that. It says, Yasu lefonai kasedazeh. They should do, Klai Yisrael should do the Yud Gimel Mitzvah Rachamim in front of me. They should do it. And there's a sefer called Tomei Daveri that explains that what it means is that what you need to do is these 13 midas. If you Klal Yisrael, you as an individual, you carry out these midas, then you'll receive kapara. You need to do it. So if we follow that point, and so let's take it through together, this idea of the Re'ehu, I think Pshat is like this. Hashem says, do in front of me this Seder. What does it mean, do in front of me? It means you be such a friend for someone else. You be a Re'ehu for someone else. What's Re'ehu got to do with Hashem, Hashem? It's exactly the same thing. Hashem, Hashem, Hashem says, I'm your friend. I'm that Re'ehu. You want to know why? Because even after you admit, Vidya's confession, Vidya's clearing the air, Vidya's speaking out what you've done, Don't worry. I'm still going to be your friend. I'm going to be that Re'ehu. Hashem says, I am Re'ehu. And you know what you need to do, says Hashem? Yas lefonek sedazeh. Realize, of course, that's what I am. But I want you to do the same thing as well. You be that Re'ehu for someone else. You be that person who someone else feels they can have confidence in. And they can open up to. And they can realize they're not going to get the head bitten off when they admit to you. When you admit to them what you've done. What you've done to them. It's a very powerful idea. Because this really fits in with all of the points. Again, we're told in Elul, Ish l'Re'ehu matonis l'Avyonim. During Elul, a person's supposed to be l'Re'ehu. For a Re'ehu. You're supposed to be a Re'ehu for someone else. So what that means is, let me sort of try and make this a little bit more concretized, and then we'll put the two ideas together.
Can I just say, who's the father of the Muslim movement?
With Charles Lanta.
So in Elul, he used to go and speak to people, and he used to be like someone who was very strict with himself the whole year, but then in Elul, you could see him schmoozing with people all the time. Maybe that's what he was
doing. Yeah, definitely. Ishrayim, Atonis of Yunim. So I think it's on a couple of levels, this Ishrayim Atonis of Yunim. Be a Re'ehu with someone else. That obviously always starts with the family, with the spouse. Be there for someone else. Be that Hashem Hashem. In the same way that Hashem's got in the middle of Hashem Hashem, be that person for someone else. Be the person that you know that your spouse can come to you for anything. For anything. Of course, if it's a serious issue, you'll deal with it. But have an open relationship where anything can be discussed. Where there's nothing which is out of bounds and nothing which will be kept a secret. Once you've got it with the spouse, make sure your kids can have that. We all want it that our kids will be able to feel comfortable to and tell us what's happened to their lives. We can be that Re'ehu. That's the starting point. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the same thing with us. Yash lefonei kaseidah hazeh. So Hashem is that Re'ehu for us. We've got to be it for others. And then we can have a full kapara. And just to sort of end on one extra idea maybe. I was thinking about this a few weeks ago when the Haftarah was being read. The Haftarah a few weeks ago, it said, Ke'ish asher imoy tenachamenu. Like someone whose mother has comforted him, kein onoichi anachemchem. So too I comfort you, says Hashem. Right? Just like someone's mother comforts him, Hashem says, so too I'll comfort you. And a thought struck me, I don't know if this is Pasha Pasha, but a thought struck me that the Navi is telling us, you want to know what your relationship with Hashem is going to be like? Take a look at a mother. When the mother gives compassion, that's what Hashem's like. And we find similar sort of ideas regarding fathers as well, but it says that regarding mother. We've got to realize that the way that kids will see Hashem is the way that we are with the kids. The paradigm that a child has for a relationship of someone who's higher to someone who's like a child is from a parent, right? So the better and stronger and more healthy relationship we have with our child, the better, stronger, healthy relationship they'll have with Hashem. Because you've got a parent who's abusive, and then the child hears about that Hashem is like a parent, I think, I've had enough of that. Right, I've got that at home. I don't need that in shul. I'm out of here. And I think it's all the same idea. When we're the Re'ehu for our family, we're gaining ourselves, because we're being that Re'ehu, we're following Hashem's ways. But then they're also able, our family are also able to see Hashem. So we discussed a lot of different ideas. I'm going to end with a nice little Chassidish Maaseh, which always brings it all together. But again, just to recap what we've said. Yeah, just to recap what we've said. I'm always very scared I get over because often I just completely lose myself. And we end up silly times and everyone's too polite. I want to be quiet. So just to recap what we said, just to summarize, we said quite a few things. Question was, Hashem, Hashem. How does it work? It sounds like Harry Potter scene. It just sounds like you just say something and It doesn't make any sense. Two answers, but each answer's got its own development, and it perhaps also comes together. Answer number one is, Hashem is giving us confidence to do teshuva. Because Hashem is saying, realize I'm Hashem before and after. And once you've cleared the air, don't worry. It's fine. It's not going to change the balance now, and it's going to be a whole mess. And, you know, it's going to be all awkward in the future. No. I want you to talk to me. And we use that by talking to Hashem in our own language, clearing the air, talking to Hashem about the last year, about the future, about our aspirations, etc., etc. That's number one. Number two, Hashem is, Hashem is telling us to copy him. And if we follow along, Hashem being this amazing friend, so to speak, we should do the same thing for others as well. Right? But it's following along. But if we do that, we follow Hashem, we copy Hashem, then that itself will be a zechus. So again, two answers. Number one, we have confidence to do teshuva. Number two, our teshuva is accepted if we do that with other people, because we're following Hashem's ways. So just to finish off, regarding this this idea of Hashem being our friend. Hashem being that friend that we can rely on, and it's not awkward, and we can go there and just talk to him. The Rishna, the scholar Rishon, they say about him that one Leil Yom Kippur, he was pacing up and down, and he clearly had absolutely no menuchas hanefesh. He was not davening, nothing, and the Chassidim were watching him, and they didn't realize what was hurting him. And suddenly there was some sort of flicker. And he started davening, and he had this amazing Yom Kippur. Okay, so generally speaking, Chassidim don't always ask the Rebbe. The Rebbe is just the Rebbe. And but one older Chassid went to the Rishna and said, "What happened? What suddenly changed in the middle of Yom Kippur?" So the Rishna said like this. He said, "I realized what was going through the mind of Yankel the water carrier." Yankel the water carrier, right? Has to always come up. He said, "Call over Yankel the water carrier, and I want to discuss with him what went through his mind, because that is what changed my Yom Kippur." So this old chassid went to Yankel the Vasta Trager, and he said to him, "Yankel, the Rebbe wants you." Yankel was a simple man, though. And Yankel said, "What does the Rebbe want from me? I'm scared." He said, "Don't worry. The Rebbe has got no issues. On the contrary, you inspired the Rebbe. Come and speak to the Rebbe." So the Rebbe turns to Yankel and says, "Yankel, take a seat." He says, "What's the Rebbe want?" He says, "Yankel, what inspired you? What inspired you on Leil Yom Kippur? Because I was watching you," said the Rebbe, "and from you I got inspiration." And Yankel said like this. Yankel said, "You've got to realize, I'm a simple man." He said, I was only educated at the age of 10, and then I had to earn a living. I can read, I can do some basic translations, but I'm not sophisticated at all. I come into shul, I see everyone davening and crying and shaking their hands, and then they're into their davening, and I'm sitting there, and I don't really understand what's going on. And I'm looking through the Siddur, and I'm reading towards the beginning of Leil Yom Kippur, and I see the following words: "V'salachta la'avoini kirafu, you should forgive my sin, kirafu." And he said, "I read the words, and I've got basic ability to translate. You should forgive my sin because it's great, because my sin is great." And I had a kasha. "What do you mean Hashem, you should forgive me because my sin's great? On the contrary, you say to someone, forgive me because I've done something small. It's not so terrible. So what do you mean you should forgive me because it's great?" And it's actually a good question, right? The Mepharshim did discuss the question. There's all sorts of different ideas. But Yankel said the following, simple but beautiful. Yankel said to the Rebbe, but then I realized an answer. He said, "I'm a water carrier." He said, "It's not an easy job. I'm schlepping heavy stuff all day." He said, "Often I come back at the end of the day and I've got a few buckets of water I'm trying to transport. And it's too much for me. It's too much for me. It's just too much for me to carry. And I'm trying to do the last few bits of the last few journeys. And I just feel it's too much for me to bear. And then I see my friend Moishla. And I say, Moishla, can you do me a favor? Can you take some buckets for me? And we'll do the last bit together. And Moishla is a good friend. He takes it from me. And that's it. With that, I'm able to bear that burden. And he said like this. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I think it's the same idea here. He said, Hashem, I try so hard during the year, but I've got a very heavy burden. Ki Rafu is very, very heavy. And I can't do it alone, Hashem. It's too much. I try, but it's too heavy. And if I say to Hashem, my friend, just like Moishla will help me ease the burden, Hashem, Salach Tullah Avoini Ki Rafu. Forgive my Avoinis Ki Rafu, because it's just too much. And when the Rishon heard that, his Yom Kippur changed. What's the idea? What's the Rishon trying to share? It's just about having simple conversations with Hashem. Sometimes we overcomplicate things. Simple conversations with Hashem over the next couple of weeks. Hashem, we try. We sometimes, during the year, it gets too heavy for us. Help us through. We want to be better people. We've got aspirations. We know you care about us. You're our friends. Make it work for us. So again, ideas. We've got to try and do little bits to make ourselves re-able for others. And the Mitzvah Shem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, would also in turn be re-able for us.